Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Right, I've hit the button, Josh Brown, and we do not have a name for this. It's Scott and Josh's Monday Jamboree. It's the Monday Madness. It's the 75% off sale that you've been waiting for. I don't know what this is, but we need a name at some point. This is the nearest we've got. It's just me and you blab for a bit.
Well, that's it, man. I like not having a name. I like just coming up with whatever feels right in the day, like 75% off what you need. That's what we are now, well, currently.
I'll tell you what I've just thought of, because we're going to get into, there's an article doing the rounds at the minute from ungeek.com, going through a whole bunch of completion stats for the very, very popular games across, I think they're using trophy data to sort of look at trophies that are assigned to completing a story and then say, look, how many of these big top tier games actually got finished by the, you know, by a mass audience. And we're going to get to that stuff. But as is very much the case in gaming right now, we're sort of just playing whatever comes to mind. And I quite like that each week we're spiraling, we're straying further and further from God's light. And I feel like some of the stuff that, I mean, I'm playing Assassin's Creed Rogue, like an absolute madman. I'm playing Brothers in Arms, Hell's Highway. I know that you've got some surprises you're going to drop as well. But I did think for a name for the podcast, we could be Blabbers in Arms, like
Blabbers
like Brothers in banter.
It's a choice.
It's a big old choice. Now I want you to, you should kick things off because you told me that you've been playing Super Hot, which I didn't even know that's where you were.
That's where I am now. I was playing three games over the weekend and Super Hot was the one that grabbed me the most, I would say, because I need to like preface this a little bit because I've played Super Hot before, but I've only played the VR version. I got it for the PlayStation VR. And they're two separate games, like the regular controller version compared to the VR version. It's not just like they adapted it. It's like they're two distinct games. They sell distinctly on the store. So I could never justify buying it twice. I know there have been sales since, but I got it when it first came out. But it was like 30 quid ago. And I was like, oh, I don't want to spend £60 on this if they're quite similar. So it's taken me a few years to get to the actual Super Hot game after, you know, I've played it before. I think we might have even played it at What Culture once, perhaps, where we just had like messed around on it, maybe, or someone's house, maybe it was your house, I don't know. I've definitely played parts of it before, but I've never played it all the way through, so now I'm going through it properly.
And you don't know how just, that game ends?
I know how it ends. I do know the story and where it's going and stuff. Right. It's just like the levels themselves that I'm not really used to playing with a controller because I'm used to playing around in a virtual space, grabbing bottles, throwing it and stuff like that. And it's a lot of fun, unsurprisingly. I'm here 4 years late. 5 years late at this point, I think.
Five now,
it's really good, mate. It's really,
you didn't
really good.
Play, or you won't have played Super Hot, whatever the Mind Control Delete, the one from last year, I want to say it's from. Because like that was the one where, like, because obviously like the original Super Hot came out in 2016. Like, totally one of my favorite games. Love that it's one of the most original. The thing is, that whole thing at the end of the original one where it's like, now go forth and tell the world that it's one of the most innovative shooters you've ever played. That's what I would have tweeted anyway. But like, it very much is that. But obviously, since the game said that, everyone's aware that they can't promote it in that way. But the idea that time only moves when you do, that you can duck under bullets, and I love all that stuff. It's like being inside the lobby fight from the first Matrix, and I just kind of love the feel of it. Obviously, I forget, because they put more of a soundtrack in the second one, but I remember thinking that the audio design for it was still just really cool anyway, all the slow motion whooshes and all everything flying past you and everything. What was it that made you want to go back on that? Because the reason I brought up Mind Control Delete is that they literally made a game that was so reflective of the hype around making more, and I have the vibe from Mind Control Delete, because it's an infinite game, And when you finally get to the end of it, you have to sit through a, it's 2 hours now. It used to be 8 hours. And you have to sit there on a loading bar and it's like, oh, if you want to play more, you'll have to sit through this whole thing. which just felt like such a middle finger because, oh, you want more, do you? Oh, you want another sequel? Oh, you don't want like the next thing we're working on. I was like, yeah, all right, indie dev. Like, oh, do you want to be any more indie? Like, and that thing was just like full on, like, you know, like, oh, you just, all you want is a sequel. And so in Mind Control Delete, they very much made that as almost this celebration of Superheart that feels like a middle finger. They were bowing out. But for the original one, for VR and the 2016 one, like that, it was such a brilliant set of mechanics. Like, what was it that made you go to it?
Honestly, it was because it was on PlayStation Now and it was free. And I was like, I can just give this a go. I was looking for something to play at the weekend because I was a bit sick of all the games that I had. And I was like, right, Superhot's a game that I've been meaning to sit down and play properly for literally 5 years now. And I was like, this is the time. If I don't do it now, I never will. And like, it's just, yeah, like I said, it's clicked. I do prefer it a little bit in VR than the base game. And I feel like I've been spoiled a little bit because, you know, actually being in that space and performing the actions yourself feels, if there's a level of immersion there that you're just never going to get with the controller, like actually battering a guy with a, you know, a baseball bat, or actually having to line up the throw of the projectiles and stuff. Again, like the immersion's slightly there, but that's not to say super hot base regular control version is not good, because it really is, and it's a completely different feeling experience, but one that's kind of one that feels way more intricate and way more methodical in how you have to approach it. Like, it feels almost like a puzzle game in a lot of ways, you know?
Well, the thing I was going to say about the VR one is that, because you said about you can't really replicate, like, some of the poses that I got into playing the VR one, where it's like, I'm bent over backwards. I'm like Neo style. I'm sort of like, I'm arched 90 degrees backwards. I'm like stretching my arm out to stab a guy really gently with a knife while I'm shooting the other way. I'm looking back and forward. Like, and I'm like, this probably isn't how I'm supposed to be playing this, like this weird sort of like multitasking menace in the middle of the firefight. But I still love that you can do that. Because I was going to say, like, was there anything that you like felt that you couldn't do in the regular one that the VR one frees up? Because the thing that I love about VR is, you know, being able to manage multiple enemies. Like, you can almost look two places at once just by jutting your head around. And I feel like any game that takes advantage of that always feels like this can only be done in VR.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, that extra dimension to the space where you can like look around a bit more freely. You can kind of multitask a bit more. And obviously, multitasking is still part of the base game. But in the base game, there's been a lot of times where I've been like, I can't see anyone in front of me, which means there's someone behind me. So then you turn around, of course, there's like dudes spawning there and you have to take them on. And it's fun. But yeah, like for me, VR almost spoils games like this. Like, it's why I've never gone back to play Resident Evil 7 on a regular PlayStation. Yeah. I've still not done that because I played it first in VR and I played it, I played parts of it since in VR. And I'm like, has this spoiled the experience for me where if I go back, it'll feel less? It's not that it feels bad. It just feels like I've pierced beyond what is capable on modern consoles to
you're like Matrix that you went above the clouds, you've seen the light and you've got to go back down again. My thing with VR, because I remember in Superheart, there's a lot of like picking guns off the floor or like leaning down, like ducking under bullets. And for me, it was only because I was on the PSVR. I know you're on the PSVR as well, but I feel like your setup is just more reliable than mine. Like, for whatever reason, whenever I have to do things like lean down or go out of what would be the, I guess, the sight range of the camera on top of the TV, I must just disappear off their tracking capabilities completely. Because I've just, every time I lean down and try and do something like pick something up, my floating hand just floats away from me really slowly. It just completely loses it. And so over time, I never finished Super Hot VR, even though I do know how it ends. And so I never I never got through it because I just couldn't trust the hardware, which I guess would be the thing that, like, for a lot of people, the hardware holds them back, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it even did for me the first time I played it. I first played it, I was in university and I had a really small room where, like, I just, every time I like you, when I bent down to pick something off of the ground, my hands would start floating away from me. And I thought, oh, it's not how it's supposed to be done. But then when I moved and got a bit of a bigger living space, or at least a more clear living space where I didn't have
somewhere where you can spread your legs.
Yeah, somewhere I could spread my legs and I could spread my arms. You know, I got like the intended version, and that's when I came around to it a bit more and just thought, yes, this is
ultimately
this is the
way
it should be.
It is. Ultimately, we would heartily recommend Super Hot. I feel like a lot of people have played it. It does have a reputation. A lot of people know the Super Hot thing. And I feel like it's one of those, for me, it is, like, I haven't felt a game play with the core of a genre so well. like in so long. Like just that, like I said, that idea of like movement speed controlling the slowdown, like just the base idea of moving the analog stick feels different in that game than it would in anything else. And I feel like it just should be held up because of that. Because I feel like the more years we get away from it, and the fact that the only sequel they did eventually dropped last year, but like I said, is this sort of weird endless runner thing. I feel like it needs more due. Like it's sort of, it should be held up as like this great experiment into what like a first person shooter can be. Yeah. That stuff's cool. Speaking of weird first-person shooters, did you play Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway back in the day?
I loved Brothers in Arms. Brothers in Arms. Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway. I completely mangled that. I love the whole series, man. Like, that was my first-person shooter, even before Call of Duty. Like, I didn't play Call of Duty 2 until way late. So for me, it was like Brothers in Arms. And I'd play that with my dad. Like, we'd just, like, take turns and we'd have a go on that series. But yeah, like, Brothers in Arms Hell's Highway is one I always think I might rebuy and play that. And I actually might have a copy around somewhere, but I've just never actually gone back to it since.
Well, we're not spoiled by Mr. Ubi, Mr. Soft, but it is, like, £3 on the current Ubisoft sale. That's where I got it from. Because I've always heard about it. And I always love, I mean, I was, like, aware of that game because of the gore. Like, the you throw a grenade in and everyone's limbs go flying. And I remember seeing that as part of, like, a montage on some of the, like, goriest games ever type thing. And being like, what the hell is that? That must be something like a was it called Double Helix? I can't think of that old game series. Was it Soldier of Fortune?
Yes, when Double Helix was just the sequel, I think, flying around.
Yeah, and it was like that whole thing of across the 2000s of like the goriest games or whatever. And I remember seeing footage of Brothers in Arms and then being, oh, it's like a serious, gritty military thing. And whatever, for whatever reason, it took me this long to go to it. That game, especially right now, like in amongst, you think of like the military shooter space, the scene now. There is nothing that controls like that game where like, and obviously the control scheme is, I mean, it came out in like 2004. So like you are like, you know, clicking the right stick in to go to aim down sights rather than just the left trigger or little things like that. But the way that it controls in regards to like moving your platoon around, like you're always holding the left trigger. And instead of aiming, you'll sort of, well, you will aim, but you'll aim with like a little reticule to tell your dudes where to go. So once you start managing multiple teams, it's like, I'm only like a couple of levels in, I think. But I sort of systematically took apart this like airfield full of these like discarded wrecked planes and everything. And there was like 8 to 10 enemy groups that they like, all have little warning symbols above them. And if you fire on them, you can get them to hunker down because you're providing suppression fire. And so it was like, I was like, you know, shooting on some dudes and then I would aim to the side, tell one of my teams, go around the side, I'll fire on the dudes that are firing on you so you can actually get into position. And then they counter fire while you move up and then you, you know, look back across, move someone else up and you just systematically like bit by bit, like move these chess pieces into place.
Yeah.
And I was like, this just feels great. And I get, it reminded me of the XCOM spinoff, the Bureau Declassified, I think it was called, where they tried to do like a weird first person, well, like a weird action-based strategy game that didn't really work. And it reminded me of Full Spectrum Warrior as well. I don't know if you played that back
in
the day.
I didn't, no.
Full Spectrum was, I forgot the name of the software that it originally came from, but it was a piece of software that apparently was used to train soldiers in real life or something. And they like used that and made a game out of it. But it's all about placing your soldiers, picking your angles, making sure you're flanking dudes and all that kind of thing. And I was just like, yeah, in the current space, weirdly reapproaching this 2004 game that also has a very hairy narrative, like there's a very, very specific kind of weighty tone to it. I was like, this just feels really fresh. And I know that it's only fresh retrograde because it's just like, it stands out in retrospect. But yeah, man, I'm loving it. Like I said, I'm only a little bit into it, but like you said, you have pretty positive memories of it as well.
Yeah, I mean, exactly what you said there about like systematically, you know, moving through these levels, I think it really nails the sense of taking ground in like that battlefield, you know what I mean? Every inch of the level that you take and every enemy that you take down feels earned and it feels satisfying. And the fact that you've got like these suppression meters popping off, like you need your team to cover you while you're moving from point to point, it makes that kind of slow methodical approach to the combat like just feel so rewarding when it pays off. And it makes you feel kind of like a unit, even though you are just playing on your own with AI teammates. Like when you pull off like a really great assault with losing as little health as possible or without losing any of your teammates and stuff, like it feels great. And it feels unlike a lot of the World War II shooters that were around at the time. Obviously we had so many, but that was always my game of choice because I just click with that combat a bit more. Yeah, the combat in Call of Duty or Medal of Honor is twitchy and satisfying as hell, but there's something like the bombast in those games almost kind of like breaks the immersion in the way where it's just it's so fun and it's such a good time, whereas in Brothers in Arms I always felt like I was part of the fight, you know what I mean?
Well,
like I was
is,
in
like-
that space.
Yeah, in Medal of Honor and in Call of Duty, it's one person going up against everybody else. Like, I love, like, the D-Day set piece from Frontline, and it's not, there are great moments that showcase, like, a squad going forward, but it's still your one person taking over, like, a bunker, or your one person clearing out a facility or whatever. Whereas, like, when you play Brothers in Arms, like, you go down in, like, one bullet, or, like, yeah, just a couple of bullets, or you take other dudes down in a couple of bullets. So I was like, this feels really realistic. It reminds me of, was it Operation Flashpoint Dragon Rising?
Yes.
Which, like, also tried to be that super gritty realistic thing. It was weird because I guess until Call of Duty took they almost like relaxed everything and made it more overblown and made it like, I mean, Medal of Honor was doing that to some degree, but like made it more overblown. And that's when the military space really like took off. Cause like the early 2000s, between 2000 and 2005, that's when you had like Operation Flashpoint, Brothers in Arms, Full Spectrum Warrior. They were all like 2003 to 2005. And I love, like I said, I love that now because the overblown side of it has been so perfected. But yeah, I mean like Brothers in Arms, I'm going to play a lot more of it. The story thoroughly confuses me. I also spent most of my first hour with it, convinced it was Band of Brothers, and then going like, is that a character that I know from the show? Is it a similar thing? Is it?
It's incredibly similar in all but name, I suppose. It's like they watched Band of Brothers and was just gone, yeah, we'll do that. We'll do that. Everyone will love it.
There was a Brothers in Arms movie like that came out way later, but I was like, I just Googled it. Yeah, but I think that's just a movie that happens to be called Brothers in Arms, because I was just, my mind, I mean, I'll let the people at home know, I got my vaccination on Saturday, so I spent most of Sunday being blurry as hell. I know it was pretty cool, but I spent most of Sunday being blurry as hell, and I was playing Brothers in Arms, and I was like, this is, I thought this was the Band of Brothers game, and then when I was like, no, they're two separate franchises, and then I started Googling, well, my wife was Googling Brothers in Arms, because I was clearly in distress, and then she was like, no, this is a separate, this is a separate thing, but there is a movie. And in my head, I couldn't get it. I went back to bed, but I couldn't get it. But I guess tonally, there are some similarities in regards to the portrayals of war, like sticking with the squad, learning people's names, and sticking with them. So it's a big deal when someone gets shot. The beginning of Brothers in Arms, Hell's Highway, though, jumps between like 20 different scenes at like a fraction of a second each. And then you eventually land on a team that you go forward as. But it was fun. I'd still totally recommend it, especially right now if you're a bit sick of the, I guess, the Call of Duty formula, the Battlefield formula. If you want something that fundamentally plays different, something like the the Game Pass, the old school, the backwards compatibility stuff is a way to sort of revisit things, and the frame rate's higher, the visuals are better, the HDR's there, whatever. It's good. Your other thing that you have been playing was, I put a mix, you told me to put a mix of Tekken / Mortal Kombat / Injustice. Have you done a mischief?
Well, yeah, because I'm still in the fighting game kick after we talked last about Mortal Kombat 11.
The round,
and so I used to love Tekken when I was, growing up. Like Tekken 3 I lived on, Tekken 4 I even really enjoyed. But then I just stopped playing Tekken for the longest time.
Really? Tekken 7 was the one that I loved after, like, Tekken 3 is like absolute god tier, the best game of all time. And then like 4 was like, oh my God. And then 5 was when I kind of came back. But then 6 I dropped off again.
Five I dropped off because I don't know why I never bought it. It was one I just played around a cousin's, and that was my fill. And then I just didn't, Tekken 6 might as well not have even existed on my radar. But then 7 came out, and I've been eyeing it up for a while. And finally, like the Ultimate Edition or whatever was in the sale on PlayStation, on the PS Store. So I bought it, played 5 minutes of it, and thought, actually, I want to play more Mortal Kombat. So now it's got uninstalled because I've got Injustice 2 downloaded instead, because I just wanted more of the 2D style.
You want NetherRealm style.
I want NetherRealm style, and I've decided that if I want a Tekken, I'm just going to plug in the PlayStation and play Tekken 3 instead.
So is Tekken 7 going to be revisited at some point, or does it not matter?
I don't know. It might not matter.
Is it your Neo 2? I got Neo 2 to see what the big deal was, and it's just gone.
It feels like that, because I started the story in Tekken 7, and I was like, I don't know. The time might have passed. Maybe if I get Tekken 8, whenever that comes out, I might enjoy that, but... Mm. I don't think Tekken 7 is the one for me, because I just don't know if I want to jump between all these different fighting franchises at once, is the thing.
That's the thing. I will say go from one to the other. I guess the NetherRealm have got so good and so tight, and there's so much frame data and all that side of it in the new Mortal Kombat and in Injustice 2. But if you want the Tekken 3 kick while you're playing Tekken 7, you can set that game's menu music and sound effects and everything to replicate any of the older Tekkens. So if you just apply the Tekken 3 sound pack, then you might be sorted, mate.
This is what got me, though, because when I was playing it and I was, choosing characters, and strangely enough, they play how I remember them playing, like with the same moves and some of the same
animations, you might say.
Yeah, some of the same animations. And I was like, well, am I playing this because I want to play Tekken 7, or am I playing this because I want to play Tekken 3? You know what I mean? So in the end, I think I might just be after the nostalgic hit of a Tekken game I've already played, mm-hmm. rather than caring about where the story's gone. So I'm going to revisit the old game and then hopefully go back to it in the future, because after all, I have bought it for actual real money and I need to justify that somehow.
You should do as well the Tekken 7 story, because that was like, that was Namco going like, oh God, lads, we're missing out because Mortal Kombat's fly, like Mortal Kombat style of like fighting game story. We should do one of them. And so Tekken 7 is very much them doing that style of thing. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like Tekken is like, is the king for me, but like there is something about the way that Mortal Kombat is like snappier that I feel like, you know, you're not, it's that whole dialer combo thing like in Tekken where you can, like you can, if you hit like X square, double X, circle, triangle, and you punch them all in, as long as you're not too fast, that entire animation will play out. Whereas I feel like in Mortal Kombat, you can miss those timing windows more easily. And I know you can tweak those things in the options, but that's always been the thing with Tekken, that you can just dial in this big 10-hit combo, and then it almost plays itself sometimes.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Before we go any further, I want to talk to you about today's sponsor, Masterclass. With the amount of time we spend discussing and analyzing video games on this channel, it's always good to understand exactly how these experiences are put together. And fortunately for me, I can do just that with Masterclass. With Masterclass's streaming service, you can learn from the best to become your best, studying and growing with over 200 plus of the world's leading instructors. For me, I've been having a blast using a class on video game design by The Sims creator Will Wright to find out exactly how game mechanics are designed around player psychology, as well as learning how important playtesting is to shipping the titles that you and I both love. But it hasn't stopped there, as I've also been brushing up on my practical filmmaking skills directly from my favourite movie director, Martin Scorsese, as well as trying to get back in the cooking game with Roy Choi's amazing course on intuitive cooking. Seriously, my kitchen is a mess, but my belly has never been more grateful. For just $10 a month, an annual membership with Masterclass gets you unlimited access to courses on your phone, computer, smart TV, or even via audio-only modes. Even better, every new membership comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee, and 88% of members feel that the service has made a positive impact on their lives. And to put the cherry on top of that cake, right now, What Culture Gaming listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/gaming. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/gaming. What's that? You want it one more time? Well, that's the URL, masterclass.com/gaming. Right, now I'm going to watch Tony Hawk try to teach me how to ollie properly. I'll see you all soon.
Yeah, I mean, for me, like I mentioned the last time we were talking about it, like fighting games in general, like aren't my forte, and it takes me a long time to learn them. So instead of like jumping between them, I was thinking with MK11 because I'm enjoying it so much, and I do want to. I've been doing like the Towers of Time and all that jazz, and I've been looking forward to unlocking new customizable aspects of the characters, and I want to learn the characters more. So I just thought, right, I'm going to just commit to this. I'm going to learn the combos. I'm going to learn how to play it properly, essentially, and not just bluff my way through fights. And I want to get better at it. And I found myself doing that last night and just having a great time going through the towers, trying out different characters, trying out different builds. And I thought, this is great. I could like live on this for the next 5 years or whatever.
That's why it's become my like go-to like casual game, because like it's taken me 6 years, I guess, since Rocket League, where I'm not playing it every day anymore. Mortal Kombat has become my everyday thing, like where it's just spend the money, unlock one of the character towers, like play like the five different mini towers that make up the unlock stuff, get the new gear, then move on to someone else. And there is something about that. It is a grind, but like there is something about that that I do find like super satisfying. Although I will say that I think Injustice 2 did the visual cosmetic stuff in a better way. I just remember being more addicted to the Injustice treadmill, even though I live and breathe Mortal Kombat. Like, I just can't go a minute without thinking of the Mortal Kombat movie right now. But it's just Mortal Kombat's in me. But there was just something about the Injustice loop that maybe it was because it was the first time they'd done it or something, and that it stood out. The other thing that I've been playing that I'll very quickly throw in, then we can talk about what we initially said we were going to talk about like 20 minutes ago. But I've been playing Assassin's Creed Rogue. Did you play this?
No, I didn't. I moved on by that point.
Yeah, that's the thing, because this is the one that came out alongside Unity, and obviously, which was 2014, and that year was the year that Assassin's Creed died, and they just, you know, they still had Syndicate being made, so that got put out in 2015, and then they took time off and came back with Origins, and everything was forever different. But going back to Rogue and going back to an old school one, because I played Freedom Cry as well. That was like late last year. I just randomly played Freedom Cry, which is the one that focuses on Adewale. He's one of the, I think he's a slave who freed himself. I've literally done this, the story, but he's a dude who freed himself and then he manages to get a ship. And it's sort of like a mini version of Black Flag, which I drastically preferred because it was tighter story-wise. And I really cared about freeing slaves and like, you know, taking, like getting revenge on all these horrible slave traders. I was like, this is an easy access motivation for me. I was like, yes, I'll go and butcher these dudes with a machete, F these guys. Yeah. And so like that stuff was great. And then when you play Rogue, obviously the whole selling point is that you are an assassin turned Templar, you join the other side, you play as Shay McCormack, the Irish dude. And I haven't got to the point where he's switched sides yet. But the thing that's standing up to me, and the reason I mentioned Freedom Cry as well, is that the way that those games used to play, you forget how like Matrix inspired, mentioned Matrix a bit this pod, but like 2000s approach to fight choreography was like lots of flips and spins and group kills, and I missed that stuff. I didn't realize how much I missed that stuff in an Assassin's Creed context till I went back to Rogue and I was taking out like two dudes at once. I was like stabbing a dude and then shooting the guy that's past him, or like doing like the massive diving aerial kills and all that kind of stuff. And it was like it peaked in AC3, but I remember, you know, in Assassin's Creed 3 there was like a pre-release Ubisoft dev interview where they were like, oh, Connor's just like an absolute, you know, machine. Like there's, you can't stop him. All the gods are terrified of him. And I remember the comments being like, well, what's the point in playing like a stealth game then? Because we can just mow down some dudes. And it's true. I feel like, you know, with the chain system they brought in like, in Brotherhood, that like it did get to the point where you can just mow through like 20 dudes, just keep hitting the kill button. You'll just keep doing cool things. But I feel like they got so far away from that in the new Assassin's Creeds, where like now that I've gone back to Rogue, I wish they fleshed that out more. I wish that they made like the rewarding side of the combat that we now have, where it's literally just Ubisoft ripping off Dark Souls. I wish they'd made the, you know, like that idea of like earning your kills, tie that with specific animations, make those timing windows tighter, and make it so they can still take out like three dudes at once or whatever. Because like for me, it is that old school feel is the thing that I miss, when like an assassin was this badass twirling, backflipping rope on a, you know, dagger on a rope flinging dude. And I miss that.
I used to love that stuff, man. Like especially AC2 and AC Brotherhood, like you said, like being able to chain the kills, being able to, it was basic because essentially you were just waiting to parry them so you get an insta kill. Yep. But it looked cool and it felt cool. And like you said, you were in those situations where you were surrounded, you could take everyone on and you would like slip out by the skin of your teeth getting a last minute parry or something. And yeah, it does kind of take away from the idea of being a stealthy assassin. But you have to remember those old games didn't even have a crouch button. So like how concerned were they?
Boy,
anyway,
do I know it. Stuff? I spent most of the time on Rogue, like just walking through the forest, just walking through bushes, trying to sort of like walking up, because I'm also playing Metal Gear Snake Eater, Metal Gear 3, and like that game, you have to use the D-pad to walk slow enough as you get spotted. So I was like, well, I'm clearly going to get spotted playing Rogue, but no, you can just walk right up behind guys and then give them the old heave-ho.
Which is, you know, it's certainly a choice, because I guess back in the day, it was all about, you forget, but like Assassin's Creed, especially Assassin's Creed 1 and 2, was as much about chase and running away and escaping as it was about stealth. Like it was less about sneaking up on people and more about getting through in plain sight. And if you did get seen, you know, jumping in a hedge and hiding and jumping in a hail bale and hiding and stuff. But, you know, like I do wish some of those features were incorporated in the new Assassin's Creed, because while I do quite like the rhythm of combat in the new one, it feels at times a bit sluggish. Like I really enjoyed Valhalla, but, you know, after time, it feels like your options are a bit limited. And even like the gory kills, some of them are very satisfying. Some of them just kind of feel a bit off, like the sound effects don't go off when they should.
And, they've never matched them, have they? Like, no. I always notice that every single time. I remember first noticing it in Black Flag, because that was, I mean, the group kills are in AC3, but I remember in Black Flag realizing that nothing was synchronizing. And even in the Rogue remaster, it's still not synchronized.
Right. I know, man. Like, there's stuff like that. Like, just... it's not a lack of polish. It's just an annoying little thing that you always felt like should have been tighter and would have, you know, added a lot to the satisfaction and the visceral feeling of combat that they've just kind of lost a little bit in my way. I think for me going forward, you know, you mentioned Assassin's Creed Rogue there being a kind of like companion piece to Unity. You know, one came out in the last gen, one came out in the next gen at the time, and they were both completely different experiences. For me now, I would love an Assassin's Creed game to kind of go back to the Assassin's Creed Origins, but don't do it in the way that Assassin's Creed Origins did. You know what I mean? But like, give us an old school Assassin's Creed experience alongside the newer stuff. It doesn't mean you have to pack in the newer stuff, just, you know, in between or alongside. Like, this franchise is big. And if you give people choice, I'm sure people would appreciate it. Like lapsed fans who haven't played for a while, while you still retain the people who love Odyssey, love Valhalla, because those games take a long time to make. And Ubisoft likes to have Assassin's Creed games out regularly. So why not break it up with an old school feeling one?
Well, I'll tell you what I'll very quickly say, because this is a really good segue, but I will very quickly say that we think of like the Assassin's Creed, the Ezio collection. Like, obviously they've referred to it as the Ezio trilogy, and AC2, Brotherhood and Revelations, it is the Ezio trilogy. There's no name for it, but there should be for like the Black Flag collection, because like Assassin's Creed Black Flag with Freedom Cry and with Rogue forms a brilliant trilogy where like all those characters are all like intermingling with each other. They all reference each other. Adewale turns up at the start of Rogue. Obviously Adewale plays a big role in Black Flag, and it's like all that stuff crosses over and you go to the same locations. In some spots you go to the same locations, and everybody is referencing each other. Everybody's referencing what's going on. There's big chunks of time in between each one. So it's like all those things just work in a way where I was like, I really care about this period in Assassin's Creed history. And I feel like they did like a little collection of games there and they sort of moved on. And it's not that I want them to start monetizing the living hell out of every location again. But there is something worthwhile narratively to like fleshing out multiple assassins in a specific time period. And I feel like that stuff went really well. You mentioned the thing about the combat sort of feeling a bit stale over time though, with like the newer Assassin's Creed, or maybe they're not sort of offering up enough ways to change it up over the course of like an 80 to 100 hour playtime, which brings us back around to the thing that I mentioned at the very beginning, which is the article from ungeek.com, which is sort of taken off because they shared that the completion stat for Ghost of Tsushima is 50.2%, which, you know, is weird because a 50% completion rate sounds low. If you got 50% on like a test or something, you'd maybe be a little bit good. But in regards to the vast majority of people not finishing video games, a 50% completion rate is actually extremely high. Something else to throw in here is that The Last of Us 2 is one of the games that has one of the highest completion rates at 60.6% at time of recording. I had a little Google for that. But Assassin's Creed, there are multiple Assassin's Creeds in this write-up, with Valhalla only having a 19.8% completion rate, and Red Dead Redemption 2, 28.2%, and the other Assassin's Creed, Odyssey has 30%, Origins has 38.2%, and Spider-Man is the one that they've got at their number one spot with 50.8%. What's your thoughts on this stuff? Because for me, with Assassin's Creed, they've only gone bigger and bloatier, and I feel like hardly anybody has seen the story stuff that's in there. Hence the thing that we talked about, we'll stay away from spoilers, I guess, but the way that Valhalla ends should be up there with the way AC2 ends, but it's just that most people aren't seeing that story stuff anymore.
Yeah, and I think a huge part of it, especially with that AC in particular, is like, you know, all of the game is just you conquering different parts of the map. Like, you're doing the same thing every single time you go to a new region. You know, you're doing the same types of missions. It all culminates in a big assault where you gain an alliance and you add it to your map. And that's literally it for the whole game. And I think the big difference between something like Assassin's Creed and a Spider-Man and a Ghost of Tsushima is that, like, the narrative through line propelling you through the tasks isn't anywhere near as strong as it should be. Like in Valhalla, like, I could hardly say what the main story is supposed to be, because it could kind of be the future stuff that's kind of happening in the present day surrounding, you know, what's going on at a kind of massive lore level. It could be what's going on in England itself. It could be the what's going on with your clan. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many different threads happening at once that are interesting in their own right. But I wasn't wanting to finish the game to see what happened. I was wanting to finish it just so I could say I'd finished it. Whereas if you look at something like Ghost of Tsushima, I wanted to see what happened at the end of that story. Yeah. I wanted to see what we were building to. I wanted to see what was going to go down. And the same with Spider-Man. You know, Spider-Man has such a great narrative going through it in a sense of escalation and pacing. And that's, and the open world supports that. And I feel like when we've got to this point where it's just like Ubisoft in particular putting out games where they don't want you to finish it, essentially. Like, they want you to be playing to the point where the next game releases. They don't want you on anything else. So they
keep
will
you
extend
on the treadmill.
Things. Yeah, they will release expansions that continue the cliffhangers in their stories where it never feels complete. I finished Assassin's Creed Valhalla, done almost everything in it, and I don't feel like I've completed it. I don't feel complete in the experience I've got. I feel like there is more to come, or it's part of a larger whole, which I didn't get with Ghost of Tsushima. When I finished that, I thought, right, I'm pleased I've seen all this out. I'm so pleased I got to see what happens to these characters and finish all of their arcs. And sorry to keep rambling, but I think a big point is, like, in Tsushima, you get those extra activities, you get the extra side missions, but they all link and inform the main story. Like, all of the extra character side missions you get in that game, like, they're not essential, but if you do them, you're encouraged to do them because you connect with the people in the main narrative. That's where they're introduced, and then it circles back around to where their stories then inform what's going on in the narrative. So kind of everything feels purposeful in a way that collecting wealth in Assassin's Creed Valhalla just didn't, where you could do that and it's like, well, it's a good way to spend an hour, but also I've not really got anything substantial from that
everything
that will change.
Everything in Ghost of Tsushima felt like it was, it's almost like a, like one big through line path. I'm sort of doing like a diagram with my hands, like one sort of through line narrative that you were following up, and you had all these sort of like spiraling outwards threads that maybe like loop around and go elsewhere, but always come back into that main through line thread, and always propel you towards, like, if that middle thread was a giant arrow, then it's always going in one direction. Everything else comes back into that main thread. There was nothing in Tsushima that I did that I felt wasn't meaningful. Even if it was just filed under like thematics of just sort of this one guy doing what's necessary to eradicate the Mongol invasion across Tsushima itself, I still loved seeing that. I still loved interacting with the NPCs. Whereas, like you said, it's a weird paradigm shift, because I feel like Ubisoft make these massive, overblown, just huge games that can last you hundreds and hundreds of hours. And every time that comes up as a direct comment on the series, there's always someone in the comments just being, or a few people upvoting, saying like, look, that's how we like it. We want these games to be massive, and we want to put a huge amount of time into them. But then you look at the completion stat, and I'm like, okay, that is almost directly reflective of that portion of the fan base, because 19.8% of people have finished Valhalla. Assumedly, that's 20% of everybody playing Assassin's Creed is actually going to play for hundreds of hours. The vast majority of people are going to bounce off because they don't have a story-based hook taking them through.
And I think, you know, if you look at some of the other games on that list, you know, we pointed out Spider-Man and Ghost of Tsushima as some of the best from Sony's stable. But if you look at the completion rate for Days Gone, that's actually much lower. It's like 34% or something. 7,
yeah.
And I think, again, that is reflective of that game's narrative arc, because when I was playing that, I liked it, you know, more than most people, I think, or at least more than some of the reviews at the time. And I was enjoying my time in it until I finished it. But the narrative, the backbone of the narrative just isn't there. Like, that story is so episodic to a fault, where literally when you're 40 hours in, you're getting introduced to the game's main villain after you've already killed another main villain, because the story just keeps continuing and there's not one thing pushing you through. You know, there's the relationship between Deacon and his wife, but even that's kind of like stop and start. Everything is stop and start with it, to the point where it's so big and bloated that you can't really have the driving force and motivation that you do in something like Spider-Man, where your goal is very similar all the way through when you're going on one like linear path from escalating from the beginning until the climax. Whereas Days Gone was kind of all over the place and so weirdly paced that I've said it before, but there was a point where I got like 50 hours in and I realized that there was a whole other map that I hadn't explored yet, and I just thought, I think I might be done, you know, at that point. What is there at the end of the road? It's just so I can complete it. Like, the story, I've already played about two games worth of story in that time. You know what I mean? I've beaten two villains. So I need something larger rather than just content.
What's interesting, if you talk about, or we talk about, the idea of story being the thing that'll see you through, Horizon Zero Dawn's completion rate is only 34.1%. The Witcher 3's is only 29.8%. And Death Stranding is only 28.6%. Obviously, Stranding's mechanics are way harder to accept, I guess. Like, there were people like us who absolutely loved the direction that game went, and hey, give me individual triggers for my momentum while I'm walking forward or whatever. I'm all up for Kojima madness in gameplay. But something like Horizon Zero Dawn, for me, that has one of the best stories of the generation, and only 34% of all players actually saw it, kind of sucks. And so, like, kind of flies in the face of saying that, well, we're assuming that, like, you know, a story is the solution to how you would get around this problem. It seems to be a mix of things. I mean, it's weird because I feel like Horizon should be, like, should be up there as this incredible story thing in the way that Red Dead Redemption 2 is, but Red Dead 2's, like, reputation gets it up there because Red Dead 2's completion rate is only 28.2%. So it's, yeah, like, it's just a weird way for it to go. But I think ultimately, I'm curious to see what they do, I guess, across the newest generation, whether we still get these big bloated games or whether we see a return to story stuff. Because we did a really old podcast, would have been a couple of years ago now, called, like, Is or Was Stories in Video Games Just a Fad? Where, like, across the 2000s, early 2010s, like, you needed a story hook. Whereas I feel across the 8th gen, it was just like, no, you just need a set of mechanics. And we're just going to treat it like an arcade. And you're going to put microtransactions, you're going to put your coins in, and you play for a bit, and you just keep going, and it never ends, which is the end of all things for me, if that becomes the way. So yes, I must wrap this podcast up. I need some way to segue into advertising Taleford. He's someone they'll be joining us for the end of some podcasts going forward. So I'll
is
say that...
this why you flicked your hair over? Is this the rise of advertising Taleford?
The rise of advertising Taleford. I think he's staying for a few weeks. I could be wrong. And if people listen to this in the future, when advertising Taleford has left, then these outros will not make any sense. But for now, advertising Taleford is in the house. I've been Scott Taleford, joined by Josh Brown.
And we'll see you soon.
And we will see you soon. I'm going to pass it over to advertising Taleford.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.